we started recording these talks, so you better should be very, very careful. If you use it for yourself, I don't mind, but if you give it around, it's not the Dhamma for everybody, so you can do a lot of harm just passing them around. They're for people who are at the ICU. ICU, intensive care unit.
In general or today?
No, all the talks. It's not mainstream Dhamma that is taught. It's taught forest Dhamma. And it's only for people who are desperately seeking the way out. It's not for just finding some pleasure or for some nice or happiness or calmness or peace of mind, but it's actually waging a war against the Kilesas. What's that? Yes. So remember this. When you listen to the talks, they are for your ears only. If you think you want to share them, then be careful with whom you share. There are only very few people coming up, making their way up to here. There are only few people who read the Dhamma of Thanachan Mahapoa, Thanachan Mon. And even he says, you know, it's not mainstream Dhamma that he teaches. It's just for the few. So if you record these talks, at the moment I still want to be anonymous. I don't want that my name is getting out. It has two reasons. One reason is for people who are going to criticize me for what I'm saying. I want to give them the opportunity to meet me in person. Then they can do whatever they want. The other thing is, people who are going to be attracted by it, I don't want them to come. I don't want them to come. It's enough people here already. If they're getting more, it's getting crowded. And it's less opportunity for the people who really want to study the Dhamma, who really want to practice the Dhamma. The more people come, the more crowded it is and the more difficult it is getting for them. They're coming already enough, and that's about the right size. 5, 6, 7, 8 people, that's about the right size. Otherwise we cannot fit them in. But the Dhamma of Thanachan Mahapoa that he gives each morning is different.
Yes.
It's much more suitable. So he selects that the Dhamma that is given to the audience is selected because of the audience. So if he gives it in the morning or if he gives it in the afternoon, you know, it's very different from when he's talking to the people who know. So when one is listening to the teaching that he is giving to the monks, and even to the teachings that he was given to lay people who came here to the Wat and practice, there was always a comment in the beginning of his time, there was always a comment of the tape, that this tape should not be distributed to the general audience. It's not suitable. Yes. And there are quite a lot of talks. But now, because he is so well known throughout Thailand, he says there's no inhibition. Everything can come out now because he has been known and he knows what the people or the general public in Thailand. And it's very different. He knows what he's talking about and knows his reason for talking this and talking that. So he doesn't see any more the danger. But if these talks go out to the general public in the West, or in Australia, or in America, then this might cause more disturbance than help. Not all the people come here out of reason, and not even the people who come here will not stay here for a long time. Because that's what they hear is not what they like. That's what they hear is not to their liking. That is not, it's not the kind of mainstream Dhamma that everything is fine, everything is nice, peaceful, and in harmony. And that is the sole reason. So if you want to share what I say with other people, be very, very careful. The Thai forest tradition here is based on respect. Respect is something that we have forgotten in the West. Respect for the teacher, be it spiritual teacher, respect for the worldly teachers, respect for the parents. It has been lost, and it is very difficult for most of the people to get or develop the kind of respect that is necessary for a student-teacher relationship in the practicing of Dhamma. If you do not respect the teacher, we will not listen and we will not do what he says. We always know, or we think we know better than him. We try to argue with him, and that is not a sign of respect. If I say something wrong, if I remember something wrong and you correct me, that is fine. That is not what I call disrespect. If I say something in terms of practice that is wrong, or that you can prove me wrong, I'm very happy if you could prove me wrong. But that is not a matter of the scriptures. You don't prove me wrong in the terms of scripture. You prove me wrong in the terms of your own experience. That is not in the line with this experience that I'm talking about. This actually is following the teacher. And if you come to a different conclusion, or if you come to a different experience than your teacher, then this is fine. This can be discussed, and this can be helpful. It can be helpful for you, it can be helpful for other people. Knowing better, wanting to argue, is a sign of respectlessness. If we argue because we want to understand, that is different. But just arguing because we want to be right, being righteous, this is the way of the West. And this is the way, or it's a sign, in the terms of a student-teacher relationship, as disrespect. When you come here, I try to give my utmost to guide you on the right path, and the only path I'm guiding you at is the path that leads to the deliverance of dukkha, to the deliverance, to the freedom from dukkha. And any obstacles that I see along the path, out of my own experience, or from what I remember from the teachings of my own venerable teacher, I'll teach you. Or I'll say, I'll let you know. That these are obstacles that have to be eliminated. It's not something that we have to foster. When we go along this path, the Eightfold Path, or the path of Sila, Samadhi, and Panya, then that is our world. we go the middle way of practice. We neither fall into the extremes of over-discipline nor in the extremes of laziness. We have enough effort to put every minute or every hour of our day into practice. And what happens? Be it sitting meditation or be it walking meditation, then sitting meditation, walking meditation. Either to calm our mind in samadhi or to investigate in line with the truth. Looks like I haven't found a topic yet. Well, some of you want to go and leave. That would probably rob me of my talk. Some people like to go back on holiday, heat themselves up in the sun until it becomes so unpleasant that they have to go in the cold water and cool themselves off until it becomes so cold that they have to heat themselves up in the sun and they cool themselves off, and that's what they call pleasure. Isn't it? Or they fill their sensations with the sensations of smell until they get hungry and then they need to eat. Or this or that. So we heat ourselves up and we find the source to cooling ourselves down. Isn't this interesting? The most driving force within us is the force of sexual desire. And when one looks very closely at the process of sexual desire, is first we heat ourselves up. We become so hot that we can't stop it anymore. So we look for the relief of this fire that burns our heart. And the relief of this fire we call orgasm, and we call it the highest pleasure. Then the fire stops, and that's why we think that's how we can stop the fire. The moment we wake up again, the fire comes again. We make ourselves hot with the senses, with the seeing, with the hearing, with the touching, with the smelling, tasting, and thinking. And then we become so hot, and that's why I said, you know, we lay ourselves in the sun until we get so hot that we need to cool down, that we need a relief of it. Once we are so hot, we don't see that we ourselves have put us in this situation. A very simple example is, you have a fire, you put your hand in the fire, and beneath is the bucket of cold water. You burn your hand up until you can't bear it anymore, and then you put it into the cold bucket of water, and then you think you feel relief. And then you think this is the way the things should be. So we heat ourselves up and we cool ourselves. If we can't cool ourselves, if we don't find the bucket of water, then we are in real trouble. That means, in sexual terms, if we can't find a partner when we are so hot, then we are in real trouble. But we always forget that we are the ones that who heated up ourselves. We are the ones who heat our heart, who burn our heart with a desire for sexuality. We heat ourselves up with a desire for things. It means greed. Or we heat ourselves up with hate. We burn our heart with the flames of hate. We burn our heart with the flames of desire. And we're looking for the way out. And we don't see how we burn ourselves. Because we don't have mindfulness, or we just think this is the way it is. If you do not start to investigate how and why we are going in this direction to burn our heart with the flames of greed and with the flames of hate, we will never be able to stop it. How and why? So we have to understand how and why. It's coming so fast. For most of the people, they just need to see a person and then suddenly their anger develops. Their hate comes out. It seems to jump out immediately, the moment the eye makes contact with that person. But what happens is a long process. This process is extremely fast. It's a process of seeing identification, that means sanya, with thinking, with vedana, with sanya, with thinking, with vedana and sanya, until it becomes a hot ball of fire. And what we do, we think when we relieve this fire towards the other person that caused this fire, that we assume that caused this fire, then we feel good. If somebody did some harm to us and we can revenge ourselves, then we feel good. Isn't it? That is the normal way of the world. But it's not the way of practice. The way of practice is being mindful of what is going on within this body, of what is going on within the five khandhas. Having mindfulness, developing mindfulness, that is the path of practice. Mindful is the key to all things. If we are not mindful, if we are not aware of what is going on, then it is just like a train is passing by without noticing. It can be the train of hate, or it can be the train of greed, or it can be the train of sensual desire. If we don't know that it's passing by, we are lost. Because automatically our heart is in flames, and it needs for a rescue. We look for the causes in the things that obviously brought these things into existence. And then we try to get rid of these objects, either by not looking at it or by trying to catch them. So the path of investigation starts with mindfulness. Mindfulness and much more clear awareness of what is going on. Every mind moment. Not only every second, every mind moment. Vedana is coming up, sanya is coming up, sankhara is coming up, rupa is coming up, vijnana is coming up. Rupa is the body. Vedana is feeling, sanya is memory and association, sankhara is thinking, and vijnana is consciousness. These are constantly arising and ceasing, arising and ceasing, arising and ceasing, constantly changing. When they have arisen, then they will change to a height and then will change to the low until they disappear. Vedana comes and Vedana goes. Sanya comes and Sanya goes. And only the mixture of sanya and vedana brings us an unhappy or a happy memory. The mixture of sanya, vedana and sankhara brings us a long memory, a recollection of our past, a recollection of something that happened in the past, or a plan that is going to happen in the future. When we boil that down, then it is just sanya a combination of different amount of sanya, of different amount of sankhara, and a different amount of vedana. So whatever we think about in this world, whatever we imagine this world will be, is a combination of this. It's a combination of the five khandhas. That's why these five khandhas are the topic for our investigation. The five khandhas are the only topic for our investigation. And the body is the first one. When we start investigation, then we start with the investigation of the body. Maybe we start with the outside, or we start with the inside, whatever one feels like. The body is the nourishing earth for the roots of greed and hate. And that's why we have to investigate. We have to investigate it inside out, top to bottom, from left to right, from detail to cross. From whole to subtle. We have to do that day in, day out. Day in, day out. This is the main topic. This body, this form, is the source, is the nourishing earth for greed and hate. Once we have removed greed and hate, we still, though we are at the stage of anagami, we still have four more khandhas to investigate. It's a khanda of Vedana, Sanya, Sankara, and Vinyana. The body has been finished. Once greed and hate has been removed, the topic of the body has been finished. We don't need to investigate it anymore. So, the work of the anagami is that the work of the four nama khandhas, the four mind khandhas. The feeling, memory and association, thinking and consciousness. That doesn't mean that in the beginning stages we do not have to sometimes investigate also the nama khandhas when it is appropriate. But most of the time we are just concerned with the main topic, and that is the topic of the body. Now, you have a brain. Why don't you use it sometimes? Why do you always use it for playing around? Playing this kind of game, playing that kind of game. Use it only for your personal pleasure. The brain is a tool, and we can use it for investigation. That's what it's useful for. So use it. When I say something that you do not understand, use your brains to understand. Why should I? Or, Is it really helpful if I tell you everything? So that you, if I put your food just in the order that you have to swallow it up, you don't have to chew it, you just swallow it and gives you nourishment. It's not useful. Use your brains to investigate also sometimes what I am saying and why I'm saying. So why is it that greed and hate has the roots in the body? Why is it? Investigate for yourself to see why this body, this lumps of flesh, of blood, of puce, of shit and food, is the source of our greed and hate. It is the earth where the roots of greed and hate are. And from there, they are nourished. So when we want to rip out the roots of greed and hate, we have to understand the nature of the body. Think why. If you look at the body, if you open it up, if you remove the skin, if you remove the blood, if you remove the muscles and things like that, until only the skeleton is there, what is it? We don't see any point. Why do I have this body? We even might not want it, but we still grab it. Then you have to ask yourself, what is it that you want from this body? Even if this body is not as we think it is. Even if the body is not to our likes, we still keep it. It's like the same thing, as I often said, the citta is the driver and the body is the car. The citta wants to drive the car. It wants to steer it right, it wants to steer it left, it wants to go here and it wants to go there. Without the car, the citta would not have the ability to do that. So, without the body, the citta would not have the ability to indulge in all the sense pleasures. Because the sense pleasures are born out of this body. The senses of seeing, the senses of hearing, of tasting, of smelling, of touching, of thinking. And that's why it is so important to investigate the source or the nourishing earth for our greed and hate. When we talk about greed and hate, think, what are we greedy for? Think. What do we like? What do we desire? Do we desire the body? Or do we not desire to hear something, to see something, to taste something, to smell something, to touch something, or to think something? Think carefully. Greed itself, you know, needs something to go on. Hate itself needs something to go on. Greed is wanting and hate is not wanting. Greed is liking and hate is not liking. So it has to follow one of the senses. That's why the work on the body is so important. The work on the body, the work on the nourishing earth for the roots of greed and hate. So sometimes I don't say this, that doesn't mean that I do not mean. Use your own skillful approach to these things. I cannot always say everything at the same time. I normally only pick one topic where I shed light on. That doesn't mean that this is the only way we can see it. It is one way to shed some light on it, to get some more clear understanding. That doesn't mean, when I say it like this, that is the only way. Another time I say something else. I shed some light on some another aspect, and then another aspect. So if I'm criticized me for not giving the whole picture, then imagine how difficult it is to get the picture of a cut diamond with 1,000 facets in 1 hour of talk. It's impossible. Wherever you look, however you look at this diamond, you always see a different facet. And that's what I can explain. And that's what I normally explain. That doesn't mean that the other facets does not exist or do not exist. So don't be hypercritical. Think about carefully when I shed some light on it, you know, just follow it and try to understand, try to see it for yourself. And the next time you see something else. It is like building a puzzle. Today we have this stone, tomorrow we have another stone, until at the end of our practice, the puzzle makes sense. It gives the whole image. Before, we just have bits and pieces that we have to collect. Bits and pieces by doing our samadhi, bits and pieces by doing our investigation. So to round it up, the Eightfold Path, or the path that leads us to freedom, that leads us to the end of dukkha, is the path of sila. Sila means morality, the five precepts, of samadhi, that means concentration and mindfulness, and panya means investigation. Investigation is observing the things in line with the nature, observing the phenomena occurring in line with the nature. Investigation is also teaching the heart, teaching our own heart. Do you see this? Do you understand it? No, you don't understand it, so you have to observe it again. So we observe it and observe it and observe it. The same process, being dissecting the body until we understand. Or following the trains of our thought until we understand. Or investigating the namakandhas like feeling until we understand. This should be clear to you. It is investigation inside, is seeing inside the true nature of things. So it's inside. There's something that happens inside our heart. It's not something that happens inside our brain. So we have to teach our heart to understand. We have to show our heart to understand. So when we see a rotten animal, we have to show our heart that the body of this rotten animal is not different from our own body. If we do not show our heart that this is not, or that this is the same kind of body that we have, our heart will never understand. Our mind has caught it a long time ago, and it even thinks that it does not need to do it anymore. But our mind is our mind. It has figured out the truth already, and it will conclude in a few weeks' time that we are free of dukkha. But our heart is not yet free. That's why we have to teach our heart and not to teach our mind. To teach our mind, we have been trained for 20 years in the West. In school, at university, in high school. But to teach our heart, nobody has taught us. Nobody has shown us the way to teach the heart. What they have shown us is, this is the way we are. And that's what we have to accept. But that the heart has its own functioning, that the citta has its own function, that it works according to a principle, the principle of karma, the principle of anicca, anatta, dukkha, and the principles of the four elements, nobody has shown. That our citta is running like a computer with all the programs that we have installed in this life and in the previous life, nobody ever has taught us. So we have to fiddle up. We have to find out all these programs that running and are in the way of each other. So we have to eliminate them. Shut them down. In order to find a program that bothers us, or that makes our heart unhappy, or that makes our heart hot, we have to find the source or the start of the program and then decide to chuck it out, to throw it out. This is the way of investigation. This is the way of satipanya. Mindfulness and wisdom. Mindfulness and wisdom are the only tools we have. So we have to train mindfulness. We train it by going into the stages, the different stages of samadhi. Samadhi means rest, means peacefulness of mind, means concentration. Until the deepest state of samadhi, that is one point, where the body disappears and the whole world disappears, and all what is left is the knowing nature of the citta. That's where we get some rest, like the people, when they have worked, they go and sleep. So, do we use samadhi to rest our mind, to refill it with the energy, and also, in the process, to sharpen our mindfulness. To sharpen not only mindfulness, but the awareness of whatever is happening each mind moment. This is utterly important. If we miss half of it, we will not understand. If we are missing half of the processes that are involved in this particular task, we will never understand. We will understand it the time where we have our mind, complete mindfulness, 100% mindfulness, and see the task in action. So we see vedana in action, we see sanya in action, we see sankhara in action, we see rupa in action, and we see vijnana in action. Once we see it, and what is triggering what, and what is evolving how, and when, then we will understand, and then this is called insight. See inside the true nature of these happenings. Understanding, and once we understand them within our heart, that's what we can call wisdom, and wisdom is the thing that liberates us. And here I want to ask to stop.